This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. Over these weeks on another program I host, our Monday night Celebrating Our Musical Future, we've been hearing a series of concerts that took place back in April, in 1 week of April, of string quartets. Young quartets, all of whom went through New England Conservatory's professional string quartet training program, headed up by cellist Paul Katz, who's a founding member of the esteemed Cleveland Quartet. All of these young groups now have established careers. We've heard the Parker, Jupiter, Omer, and Harlem quartets. This Monday we'll hear the Verona and the Israel-based Ariel Quartet, and they are my guests today. Though all the quartets who go through New England Conservatory's program are established, the Ariel really started early, being paired together while in middle school in Israel. Violinists Alexandra, Sasha, Kazovsky, and Gershon Gerchikov and cellist Amit Eventov were established as Ariel before stepping foot in New England Conservatory, so still in their 20s, they've already celebrated their 10th anniversary. When their founding violist left, the group then were joined by German-born artist Jan Grüning, and it is Jan who will speak with us today. He then went and married cellist Amit, solidifying the quartet even more. They have won numerous prizes and competitions and performed all over the globe. They are currently string quartet in residence at the University of Cincinnati's College Conservatory of Music and divide their time between Israel and the U.S. They have just released their debut recording on the Avi label of string quartets by Brahms and Bartok. That's them performing the first minutes of the first quartet effort by Bela Bartok, the string quartet number one. I spoke with Jan by phone from Israel last week. Very happy today to be speaking with one quarter of the Ariel String Quartet, Jan Grüning. One reason that we're talking with you today is that next Monday, you're going to be heard by our listeners as the third concert, which took place at the New England Conservatory in Boston, celebrating the 150th anniversary of that institution in the Great Jordan Hall. Last April, three concerts with two string quartets per concert, all done in a week in April. And it was also to celebrate the professional string quartet training program, which all of you went through at the New England Conservatory. First question is, I've had over 13 years of this program, I've had many string quartets, and common ground is when they get together, they usually find each other at college or at university. You guys are a little bit of the exception, is when you came to New England Conservatory, you were already established. You established yourself in 1998 in Jerusalem. What did bring the four of you together?
Well, I mean, the four of us, I'm saying the four of us, I'm the odd one out, so to speak, because I'm the only one who's not a founding member, but rest assured, I've heard the story many, many times.
Okay.
So I know that the four of them met in what would be middle school, basically, around eighth grade when they were like 12, 13 years old and started playing together. They back then were just in a special school that was focusing, aside from the normal regular subjects, was focusing on music as well as dance. And so they had a bunch of very talented musicians and dancers in that school. And so after their regular classes in the morning hours, they would have different either music or dance-related activities. And so for the musicians, chamber music was, of course, kind of a no-brainer and a part of that curriculum. So the four of them were actually put together in a quartet kind of sort of randomly, just, you know, by age, by ability, I'm guessing. And so they had a class here with a teacher called Avi Abramovich, who was also the teacher of the Jerusalem Quartet. They came out of the same school, so to speak. And so, yeah, they started working together. And in the beginning, they say, you know, back then being 12 years old, they kind of got a kick out of their teacher having a funny Romanian accent and they sort of making fun of him a little bit that way. But at the same time, Avi was very smart and brilliant with the way he chose repertoire. So he gave them always pieces that were just out of reach for them, so to speak. And so they'd had to, you know, bite their teeth out on that kind of stuff. And that really got them hooked. So pretty soon, you know, they started skipping school and rehearsing. And so that's kind of how it all developed. And, you know, there are a couple of really wonderful programs and institutions and foundations here in Israel that support young musicians, such as the AICF, the America Israel Culture Foundation, as well as the Jerusalem Music Center that Isaac Stern founded, from both of which they got a lot of support and help in the formative years. And so when they were ready to study, basically they went abroad when they were 17, 18 to participate in the famous Graz Quartet competition, Franz Schubert and the Music of the Modern. Surprisingly to them, they won it. They won first prize. And so one of the juror members was Paul Katz, as well as Lee Pfizer, by the way, the last cellist of the LaSalle Quartet.
Yeah.
So the connection with Paul proved really, really important for them, because Paul brought them to the Perlman Music Program for the summer, where they met Mr. Perlman and Paul Katz and other members of the New England Conservatory that regularly teach there. So that's kind of how they made that connection to America. And then they were able, through that connection and with those channels, to start studying in Boston. And so that's kind of what brought them there and how they got there.
From the get-go in 98, were they the Ariel or not?
They were the Ariel pretty quick. I think they had a couple of nameless months, identityless months. But at some point, they like to tell the fun story that, you know, one of their important concerts when they were 12 years old was a bar mitzvah or a Hanukkah, actually a Hanukkah ceremony, as far as I remember, a Hanukkah ceremony. And so back then, the president of the school thought it would be impossible for a quartet, you know, to participate and play a public performance without a name. So jokingly, they kind of think back to that. And then actually their president suggested a couple of different names because they didn't know what to choose. And Ariel was one of them, which is the one that they picked. And it's actually, Ariel is one of the names. Jerusalem has a bunch of over 60 or 70. It's kind of unclear, just like with the Haydn quartets, how many there are for some reason. But there are a lot of biblical names for the city of Jerusalem. And so Ariel is one of them. It means literally translated the Lion of God. And it is actually in the banner of Jerusalem is a lion. You see it everywhere when you're here. And yeah, that's the namesake of the quartet.
Yeah, I was just curious about when the name came in, because a couple of years ago, like I said, I've interviewed a lot of string quartets on this program, and a lot of them are young players. A couple of years ago, the Danish quartet had their eyes set on trying to break the Borodin Quartet's record for the number of years. And I just thought, if Ariel was way back in 98, you know, if you hang together for long enough, you guys have a good shot at breaking that record as well. Not that,
exactly.
Yeah. As mentioned, my guests, the Ariel Quartet, will be featured on this Monday night's Celebrating Our Musical Future, along with the Verona Quartet, in the third and final broadcast from the New England Conservatory's 150th anniversary celebration held this past April. Six quartets and three concerts, all in one week. Here's a teaser from that upcoming broadcast. My guests in the opening movement of Leos Janáček's String Quartet No. 1, subtitled Kreutzer Sonata, inspired by Leo Tolstoy's novella, The Kreutzer Sonata, that was in turn inspired inspired by Beethoven's Violin Sonata No. 9, known as the Kreutzer Sonata, from the name of its dedicatee, Rodolphe Kreutzer. So this is Gershon Alexander and Amit come over here. Paul Katz, you know, tells him about the program at New England Conservatory. I know you are connected to the quartet more than just musically, but I mean, how did you then join in to these, to the three players?
You know, in quartets, just you mentioned the Borodin, and there's so many quartets, you know, have change of players every now and again. It's just kind of some part of it. But what happened to them is that it's because they started so early on, they were a very tight-knit community. I mean, still like a family, and every quartet is that way. But at the same time, I'm always shocked when I talk to other quartet players on how different every quartet works. But for me, it was an interesting transition because I always wanted to. I had played a lot of chamber music, but I'd always wanted to join a quartet. So when their former violist, the founding violist, decided to leave and they were looking for someone, the connection was made. I had spent a year studying in New England Conservatory with Kim Kashkashian. Yeah. So she knew them and me and thought it would be a good fit. And then at the same time, they had just spent a year studying with Walter Levine from the LaSalle Quartet in Basel. So Walter knew my old teacher, former teacher Barbara Westphal, very well, and she, you know, recommended me as well. So kind of from both sides, the European and the U.S. side of things, it came together that way. And then we met up and tried out, played a couple of concerts, and yeah, how it usually goes at the end, it works somehow. So yeah, but it was a really fascinating time for me, for sure, yeah, to join such a tight-knit group with
Well, then you kind of made it even more tighter knit, did you not?
Yeah, I did. You got me. Yeah, Amit and I are married since 3 years now, and we just she gave birth to our child in our first child in January. So that's a whole new ballpark for us.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
I'm curious, the program at New England Conservatory, I mean, I've told our listeners about it the last 2 weeks when we've presented the programs by Parker and Jupiter and Amar and Harlem. And it's not unique, but in a way it is. Just tell us, I mean, I know you all get lessons on your particular instrument, but then there's this quartet training, pretty intensive quartet training that Paul Katz runs. Kind of just take us inside what happens in that program.
Well, I think the special thing about this is that, yeah, you have your individual lessons, and of course they are very, very important. But at the same time, you get many, many regular lessons with Paul, who, you know, founded the program and still runs the program. And so, in essence, it's kind of like a double major, I think, in that sense, that, you know, you're challenged just like everybody else in your own studio, and you go to your practice room and you do, you know, what you need to do. But at the same time, you have this intensive chamber music experience. And, I mean, it's always catered to preformed groups that apply to this and take part of this program. I mean, the players that look for that, the quartets that look for that, they look for exactly this. They look for Paul's expertise, and with Paul's expertise come, of course, wide range of possibilities that NUC has to offer, for, especially for string players, I mean, for many other instruments as well. But since they made that hire of having basically 3 out of 4 Cleveland Quartet members there, that's just a very, very, and then with the Borromeo String Quartet that is there too, it's very much string quartet and chamber music oriented. And at the same time, the whole school, it's very important for everybody to do chamber music. A lot of people work very, very intensely and very hard in not preformed groups, just from semester to semester. The players are such a high quality that it's a very interesting kind of dynamic to be a preformed group and the group that participates in the string quartet training program that way. And the string quartet training program group, that they have their own recital every year in Jordan Hall, which of course is such a great chamber music hall. And so together with that extra, I think the closest you could come is kind of describing it as a double major in that sense. But yeah, it's an amazing experience for sure.
One question I normally ask string quartets is why, meaning these are 4 players who at some point say, we don't want to have solo careers, or we don't want to focus on that, we don't want to sit in an orchestra, we want to spend our time as this quartet. I think the quartets that go through the New England Conservatory program, the results are there. They've turned out some great world-class quartets, including yourself. The musicians that go through this program are already thinking and have already have the mindset, we are going to be a quartet.
Yeah.
I mean, this is already a foregone conclusion, right?
Exactly, yeah. And that's because they're all preformed groups, and they know they want to, you know, hone in on those skills and work on them for every week. But why is a good question? I mean, I think that it's a mixture of many different things. First and foremost, the repertoire. It's so vast. It has so many gemstones. I mean, it's basically almost only gemstones.
Right.
It's a repertoire that is so attractive and so alluring. And then at the same time, being able to, I mean, I have many friends, soloists, who play a lot of chamber music. I mean, it's fair to say that half of the concerts they play are chamber music. But most of the times, you know, it's in festivals or it's for 2-3 concerts. So all they really ever dive in, if they feel really courageous, even as the wonderful soloists and players that they are, it's unrelated to their ability to play. It's just really rehearsal time and space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a middle Beethoven quartet is already a stretch. So forget about a late one, unless, you know, people have played it many, many times before and they want to give it that aspect. So a Brahms quartet is a very different issue to put together than, say, a Brahms quintet or a Brahms sextet. So it's just that ability to live with this music and to process it, let it process you, and let it become a part of you and become a part of it. It's kind of a symbiosis that way that is really fascinating, and that to be able to observe how these pieces, you know, change over the years and you change with them. I mean, the Brahms on RSCD is a good example. They've been playing that for the better part of 15 years now, and in many different occasions and competitions, and they've really lived with this piece through many ups and downs. And so it's kind of it's like a friend. You come back to a friend if you haven't seen him for a while, then it's a different way than if you see him every day, and or him or her, of course, or the Bartok is newer for us in that sense, but already felt like, you know, when we put it on that disc, we all felt pretty unanimously that, yeah, this is the version of Bartok 1 that we want to hear. That's what we want to do. And of course, you know, we're not naive. Everybody knows in 10, 20, 30 years, you know, you hear it and you probably want something different. And
right.
That hopefully, I mean.
Yeah.
And so So that's one aspect of it. But on the other hand, we already played that. Now we're playing it a bunch. So the CD is out to kind of promote it, of course, with presenters and audiences. And so playing it now already, we discover that it changes a little bit. And mm-hmm. it's very weird. I'm talking about subtle changes. It's nothing we discussed. It just, in fact, we hardly had time to go back to it because, you know, we know it. We have it on our fingers. There's not much to rehearse for us. Although it's a very complicated piece, but we know it. So basically, by playing it on stage, now after we've recorded it, and of course the process of recording it has probably influenced that as well, it just feels like it's just a good example for us to feel like, whoa, it's changing. It's weird. I don't know where it's leading, but it's like moving its wings again or something. It's funny that way. But anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to veer so far from the question.
No.
Really, yeah, I think it's mainly the repertoire. And then, like I said, I think every quartet works really almost radically different. I think it would be very interesting, actually, to kind of draw a parallel and kind of look really into quartets that are open to sharing. Not everybody is open to sharing, of course, and that's fair enough. But it's a very tight-knit world that has its intense upsides. Like the four of us, for example, we're so close. We're really like family, and I've grown completely into that. I've married into it, but yeah. I've actually really grown into it to the point that, you know, we would do anything for each other. We help each other. I mean, we can leave our daughter with Sasha or Gershon if we really need it for something like that. Or if we need an errand done, they would run it for us without, you know, skipping a beat. And I'm not sure that's true for every group. I know, in fact, it's not true for every group, but there are upsides to other groups too. I'm not trying to compare here, but on the other side, you know, being like a family, I mean, everybody who's listening to this has a family and has had a gripe with one of them. So it's, you know, as intense as our joyous moments are together, I think it's fair to say as hard are sometimes moments of disagreement. And so, plus you see each other a lot. It's
right.
a lot of time
right.
spent together.
Yeah.
So I think that is both an attraction to playing in a quartet as well as a deterrence, maybe. But yeah.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about a quartet or any chamber ensemble, piano trio or something like that, is you're not on the clock, which means you don't show up for an orchestra rehearsal and it's over in two
right.
hours or something like that. You guys could be with each other for hours working out various
yeah.
things. Dip into the debut release of my guests today, the Ario Quartet, CD released on the AVI label. Here is the closing movement, the finale from Johannes Brahms String Quartet No. 2.
Thank you.
Before we get back to repertoire, just one more thing. You mentioned the Borromeo, and I believe it was you filled in for them. And Nick Kitchen said, hey, you know, this is Ariel. And that sort of opened the door because you're still the quartet in residence for University of Cincinnati Conservatory of Music College?
So
you kind of now have taken what you were doing at NEC at New England Conservatory, and now you are at this great music school. What you learned from Paul Katz in that program we were talking about at New England, how do you pass that on now that you're the teachers, you're the quartet in residence in this in this school?
It's a very important thing, I think, for a performing musician, mostly performing musician, to have a chance to teach. And I think most performing musicians are looking for that, I think in different degrees. But I think to just have that experience of both giving as well as performing, I think, is very interesting in many on many levels. We are very fortunate because the tradition of a string quartet in residence, it's such an important one at CCM, specifically with having had the La Salle Quartet there for 30-some years.
Right.
From the middle of the 50s until the 80s. And, of course, Walter was next to Paul, one of our string quartet mentors. So through that connection, and then the Tokyo Quartet was there also. So it's kind of big shoes to fill that way. But we enjoy every bit of it. We believe that our students, they, just like us, we know we went to the practice room, like I said earlier, and we practice our Paganini and whatnot, and then we go to orchestra and we learn those wonderful works. But at the same time, I think that chamber music, really the way we view it at CCM, has kind of a role to bring people together truly. And that is because when you go to the practice room, you execute, or you try at your best to execute what your teacher advises you to do. When you go to the orchestra, you know, you have these amazing conductors who show you how to play Beethoven's Ninth Symphony or whatnot. You know, you learn from someone, and that's wonderful. But when you're in a chamber music situation, you have the unique possibility that there is nobody higher than you. Everybody is on the same level.
Right.
And so, you know, your friend tells you play out of tune. It's a whole different level than when your teacher tells you it's out of tune.
Yeah.
It's almost worse in a way. but it makes for, nevertheless, a very interesting dynamic. You have to make your own artistic decisions. You have to live with them, and everybody has to be equal and has to have a word in. So I think that sort of rehearsal format that is necessary for chamber music, combined with the fact that people do it out of joy, not only because it's part of their curriculum, but because, you know, that in a way it's kind of a musical outlet, if you know what I mean, because they get to choose their own repertoire, and they've always wanted to play, I don't know, the Borodin Quartet or whatever, and so then now they'll do that, or a Beethoven Quartet or a Mozart Quartet. And so that way it feels like something of their own choice, unless, of course, they choose something way out of their reach, then we kind of gently push them to the vast majority of other things there are still to pick from. But it's kind of a marketplace to get together and to really get to know each other, and we try to really promote that by, at the beginning of each year, we have a party, so to speak, where everybody comes together and sight reads together. New students can meet current students, and we read with them. In fact, we always do some Mendelssohn Octet with everybody, and it's usually great fun. So that way we really try to emphasize the fun part of that learning experience, but also at the end of each semester there are two chamber music bashes, which is a tradition we've taken over from the La Salle Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very long evenings where everybody gets to play a movement or two of what they worked on the semester, and that way everybody kind of knows what other people are doing. So it becomes kind of an underground thing to be good at chamber music, to have a good group, to shine that way. It becomes kind of like an honorary thing, and that's a lot of fun to watch, because we don't promote, you know, active competition in any way, and it's not meant to be in a competitive way. It's really important for us that people come from a fun kind of aspect.
Yeah, it's kind of a healthy, not competition, but healthy, just sort of
exactly
passing of artistic skills. Of course, you've embraced Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a very different city than Boston, a very different city than Jerusalem. So, you know, you've kind of embraced Cincinnati as well. How much time, what is your percentage of split between being here in the U.S. and being in Israel? I'm just curious what...
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it's probably a third and a third and a third.
Okay.
maybe. So it's about a third of actual days spent in Cincinnati, and then maybe a third to 50%. It really depends, because usually how it works is that we're in Cincinnati during the week or during the majority part of the work days of the week, and then we leave for a concert, we come back. So we have a lot of, you know, 1-2 day trips that happen this way. And then we leave for longer periods over the winter break. We always go to Europe. We play regularly in Germany. We have just been in Germany also now. We'll go to Italy later this summer in August. So we're doing more and more stuff in Europe as well. We also have a South American representation. So we've been to Brazil and Chile. So we really kind of try, though, to have a little bit of time at home. So here in Israel, you know, it's a very small country. I mean, it's smaller than the state of New Jersey.
Right.
But it's a very prolific and active music scene. So we always play in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and in Haifa, and make sure that we kind of, you know, go back to our roots. A lot of people that have supported the quartet here, you know, we want to make sure that we give back and that we come regularly here. But it's part of our European tour, which happens 2-3 times a year about, so.
Here are my guests, the Ariel Quartet, captured live at South Mountain in music of Mozart. This is the final movement from the string quartet number 14 in G major, Kirschel listing 387, nicknamed the Spring Quartet, the first of the six quartets he dedicated to the father of the string quartet, Franz Joseph Haydn. A little bit on repertoire, just the new CD, as you mentioned, is Brahms and Bartok, and those two composers sort of follow the line that starts with Beethoven, and the Ariel has already conquered that summit. Some quartets really push it off or wait or have some reason why, and that's doing the Beethoven cycle. Done it a couple of, you did it in Napa Valley, didn't you, or something like that?
Yes, we did it in Napa Valley. That was in 5 concerts in 5 days.
Yeah.
That was the most condensed cycle we did. We did it one day, every concert in a different vineyard. So
yeah,
we were always joking and saying it must have been a lot of fun for our audience.
Yeah, you couldn't partake of the vineyard till after you played, of course.
Not really.
How, whether you do it in 5 days, or how physically and mentally exhausting is it to do that? Since you've done it a couple times now that you have, it's not just once, you've done it a couple times. So, I mean, to go through the Beethoven quartets, I mean, just physically and mentally.
It kind of has two sides to it, at least for me. On the one hand side, I do remember back when we did the first cycle, which was 4 years ago, simultaneously, it was the first Beethoven cycle in Cincinnati as well as in Sarasota, Florida. And so we did both of them in the same year, parallel, our first two cycles. I think the Napa Valley one was our 5th or 6th one. We're just right in that gray zone where we stopped counting. So. But right in the beginning, we did it stretched out over a whole season in three pairs of concerts, two concerts each. And so that back then was very, very stressful and difficult for us. We had to prepare a lot for it. And by the time we reached the 6th concert, there was still one piece we'd never played on stage before. We tried, to make sure that we had all performance experience with all of them before we start doing it in cycle. But still, one of the quartets we hadn't, we've actually performed together for the first time in the cycle. So back then, I remember actually one concert, the 3rd concert got canceled because of, due to a snow emergency. And so that 3rd concert got attached to the last pair of concerts, which made it 3 concerts of 3 works each, meaning 9 quartets within 5 days. And that to us was scary.
Yeah.
And when we got there, we handled it okay, but it's also just a fear, not just a mental exhaustion, but also physical exhaustion of so much music and such intense music. So that got a lot better. I think by now, I mean, for the Beethoven year, one of the things we're offering is a 4-day cycle to do it in 6 concerts in 4 days, which is now kind of the next challenge for us, something we'd like to do. And with that Napa cycle, I think we got to a place where it was difficult. The 3 weeks before that Napa cycle, we kind of really set aside consciously. It was supposed to be a holiday, but then we made it rehearsal to go through each quartet, and it just really adds up. So if you just do 6 quartets per week, it basically means you do 1 quartet per day, almost.
Right.
So those 3 weeks flew by. I remember that very well, but it got a lot easier. You kind of have a experience of zooming out. In the beginning, you're very much into each movement, into each note. You're very much in the midst of it. It almost feels like, I guess, swimming in the ocean, in the open ocean. I don't know whoever's done that. I've done it once, and it can be very scary when the waves around you are, 6-7 yards high, and you know that there's a boat, a couple of meters away or yards away, but it's not. You're still in the open ocean.
Right.
So that kind of feeling of being exposed, but then at the same time, with the zooming out, you kind of get that overview and you understand, okay, I'm actually looking at the Atlantic Ocean, and here's the U.S. coast and here's the European coast, and I can, I can deal with that. And I see the overview, and that kind of becomes then an overall arch that is really amazing to experience. And I think that's one of the reasons why we want to do it in a shorter proximity of time, is to kind of really experiencing it in that way and making that arch even tighter knit also for our audiences, because it's a very different experience if you hear it within a couple of days or if you hear it throughout the whole season. Not that the whole season is a bad thing, but it's an exhausting exposure almost, and it's a good thing and perhaps a difficult thing at the same time, but you will still want to do it.
Yeah. The new recording, as I said, this would be a natural line of the quartet running through Brahms and then going to Bartok. I guess, I suppose the one interesting thing about the new recording is most string quartets recording Bartok will do all 6. So you've just got number 1 on here, so that begs the question. I mean, are the other 5 under the figures? Are you thinking of completing the Bartoks at some point?
I think we certainly do. We've agreed with Avi that we're looking ahead at more pairings in various forms of Brahms and Bartok. Of course,
okay.
There are only three Brahms quartets and six Bartok quartets, so one has to, one gets to actually. It's not really a burden, I find it. One gets to explore different options. So in that sense, I think it's a very interesting combination to have these two composers' language on one disc. It has incredible similarities, and then also is still so different in approach and in sonority that I think it's really fascinating to have these two together. And with the lineage, of course, is an obvious thought as well. But and then the two of them share, you know, I mean, Bartok much more than Brahms, but they share their love for Hungary and all things Hungarian.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like the combination very much. So I'm happy that we get to kind of look ahead. I think that there is more to come, but a CD is always a project. So we want to take it very seriously and kind of make sure that, you know, everything ripens in its own time. So.
Are my guests, the Ariel Quartet, performing some Beethoven, and this another sneak listen to the concert we'll air this Monday night on Celebrating Our Musical Future, the third in a series from the New England Conservatory's celebration of their 150th anniversary. Three concerts performed in the same week back in April, featuring six young quartets, all who went through the New England Conservatory's professional string quartet training program. Here, from that upcoming Monday night broadcast, is the Ariel in the final movement of Beethoven's string quartet, Opus 18, number 2, in G major. Thank you. Final thing, and also final thing on repertoire, but quartets of artists your age range here, what about new music and embracing new music for quartet? Just curious where you're at with that.
We're, again, lucky to have supporters in Cincinnati who have actually a long and full history of commissioning works. And so we have a lot of support from the community to do that and to continue doing that. These same group of people have also supported the La Salle Quartet's commissioning of Ligeti's second string quartet, for example. So there's really a bunch of amazing, amazing things happening. We have so far had one commission with Mohamed Farouz that we premiered just 1.5 years ago, and then just now we've co-commissioned together with the Lark and the Telegraph Quartet as well. That we have together co-commissioned the sixth string quartet by John Harbison. We've been playing that. We've been just doing the Israeli premiere here, the German premiere last month, and we're doing the Canadian one in September. And so I think we're looking ahead at many more years and wonderful new pieces. So we're actually very excited about this new. For us, it's new. We've done these two pieces in the last 3 years or so, but we intend to commission more, and it's a very exciting and actually challenging also project to find someone who understands you and who wants to write for a string quartet. It's not always easy.
Well, it's great to hear that the it's such a vibrant wave in the orchestral world of the co-commissioning, the multiple commissioning process. I'm glad it's happening among the quartets. It's a really healthy thing to hear. Yeah, it's great to hear. Well, our audience will hear you, the Ariel, on Monday evening with that concert recorded back in April in New England Conservatory. So I wish you the best success going forward as a quartet. We'll hear a lot more from you, I'm sure. You know, go for that record with the Borodins. You'll be together for a long time. To close all my cadenzas, I ask my guests the same two questions. You can answer for yourself, you can answer for you and Amit, or you can answer for the entire quartet if you wish. But the first question is a hypothetical, which says if you could chat, like we've been chatting, but chat with someone from the past who you never had a chance to, but could. When I ask that, what's the first name that pops into your head? If you think about it, you get swamped with names. But I'm just curious, when I ask that, who's someone you'd love to chat with?
For me, it would be Beethoven.
It would be Beethoven. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure it would be a chat, because I'd probably ask him a question and then be screamed at or something. But yeah,
no, spend a lot of time writing it down and showing it to him. But it'd be interesting to see what he thought of the stature of his quartets now and how they're performed, and just it'd be fascinating to get his reaction, I guess, is what you want to get from Beethoven, the reaction. Final question's non-musical. Everybody I interview in Cadenza fills their life with music. You guys are very busy. But when you have to do something that is take you away from music, pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, what do you do? Now, I know you got the young one at home, so you're in those years of sleepless nights and crises which turn into things that, you know, and that's parenthood. But I'm just curious what you do just when you have to get away from music for a while.
Well, I mean, for me and for Amit both, it's food. We're both obsessed with food.
Okay.
And so we both like to cook. She is a much better baker than I ever would hope to be. But we love food of any kind, and we always try to excel, you know, in it as much as we can. We also try everything we can on the road, so we try to get these influences back to home, and so that's always a fun game. But now I spend most of my time with my daughter. We both do, and it's actually, I'm loving it. Even if I have to wake up at 3 a.m, I'm just excited to see her.
Being a parent of two grown kids, those sleepless nights pass, but then there's other trials ahead, and it's all fun.
Right.
It's all great. Jan Greenig, thanks for taking some time.
Thank you so much, David.
The Ariel String Quartet, violinists Alexandra or Sasha Kazavsky and Gershon Gerchikov, and cellist Amit Eventov, and the member we spoke with, violist and husband to cellist Amit, Jan Greenig. You can find out more about them at their website, Ariel, A-R-I-E-L, quartet.com. Once again, you can hear them along with the Verona Quartet on this Monday evening's Celebrating Our Musical Future, the third and final installment in a series of three concerts recorded back in April, all presented in 1 week in April in the historic Jordan Hall, celebrating the 150th anniversary of the New England Conservatory. All these young established quartets quartets went through, that institution's professional string quartet training program headed up by cello faculty member Paul Katz, who was also a founding member of the esteemed Cleveland Quartet. Mr. Katz will join one of the quartets to perform on this upcoming concert, again this Monday night at 8, on Celebrating Our Musical Future. I'll leave you with more music from my guest's debut recording on the Avi record label, which you can check out at avi-records.com. This disc has string quartet number 2 of Johannes Brahms, but we'll hear the final minutes of the final movement of the companion work, the string quartet number 1 of Béla Bartók, performed by my guests today, the Ariel Quartet. As always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.